From Sacramento, the Bishop's Radio Hour with Bob Dunning, focusing on today's issues in the context of gospel values. Now, here's Bob Dunning on Relevant Radio.
That's me. Welcome to you on this beautiful day the Lord has made. Appreciate you all being with us on the Bishop's Hour. And as we are well into our 20th year on the air, so appreciate all of you who have listened or are listening or are a new listener, and also all those wonderful organizations and businesses that have underwritten the Bishop's Hour for all these years. So appreciate that very much. World Youth Day is a call to all Catholic youth and young adults to renew their faith in Christ and prepare themselves for the work of the new evangelization that lies ahead. You're invited to join for an overnight pilgrimage in the Diocese of Sacramento at Trinity Pines Catholic Center for fellowship, prayer, food, and a celebration through a live stream to Panama for World Youth Day. Saturday, January 26th at 1 p.m. it all begins. It runs through with, and then they'll have dinner that evening and breakfast the next morning, Sunday. It concludes Sunday morning about 11. Trinity Pines is at 28,000 Rollins Lake Road in Colfax, a beautiful facility up there. And it will feature a live stream with Bishop Soto from Panama. Also at Colfax, Vince Nims, a Catholic musician and youth minister, will be there. And the AMPED Youth Choir from St. Clair Parish in Roseville. All this, all your meals, dinner and breakfast and snacks and entertainment, etc. And the live stream from Panama. It was just $20, and you even get a t-shirt if you pre-register. Go to scd.org/WYD for World Youth Day. SCD, which is Sacramento Catholic Diocese, scd.org/World Youth Day. Should be a great event. Also, Choose Life 2019 Middle School Youth Gathering for 7th and 8th graders. 7th and 8th graders in observance of Roe v. Wade. Inviting those students, teachers, parents, ministers, be a witness to life. They'll have a live ultrasound, learn to defend life. What does it really mean to be pro-life versus pro-choice? How can we talk about abortion with our family and friends? How can we make a difference in our schools and churches? Speak Life with a guest, Anna Bach from Students for Life of America will be the guest speaker. A number of different areas where this will be presented. Tuesday, January 22nd, 10 a.m. to noon, and 6:30 to 8 p.m., two different programs at Holy Rosary School Gym, 505 California Street in Woodland. And then Wednesday, January 23rd, 10 to noon, the program will be at Mercy High School in Red Bluff. That's 233 Riverside Way in Red Bluff. And then that evening, Wednesday, January 23rd, 6:30 to 8 p.m., at our Divine Savior Parish Hall, in Chico, 566 East Lassen Avenue in Chico, our Divine Savior, again, 6:30 to 8 p.m. that night. And then on that Saturday, the Walk for Life West Coast in San Francisco, a great event to take your 7th or 8th grader to as well. Well, we're pleased to welcome in Robert Ortigo, who is an author of a wonderful new book about our friend, Pastor Walter Hoy. Robert, good day to you.
Good morning, Bob. How are you?
Good to have you with us. Tell us a little bit about yourself as an author.
Well, I'm a longtime journalist in Northern California. In fact, I worked in Sacramento as a radio reporter, and I worked in San Francisco for many years, and I worked in Reno and Seattle and other places. So
a typical radio career.
Oh, absolutely. Pretty typical. And fortunately for me, it kept going up and up until the rug got pulled out from underneath me in the Bay Area. But it was a fun ride while it lasted. And of course, it led to this great opportunity.
So is this your first book?
It is my first book. I've done a lot of writing. I've written about 10 screenplays. Mm-hmm. None of them are made into a movie quite yet. But, it's all a work in progress as you go along. And thankfully, this is an opportunity for me to really stretch my writing chops, if you will, with my investigative background. I'm a private investigator in the state of California, and my journalist background, as well as my love of American history.
Very good. Well, Walter Hoy, I don't know if he's in the history books yet, but he should be.
Well, he is, for all intents and purposes, this book's headed for the Library of Congress. Hopefully, a whole bunch of people across the country will read it, no matter what their race happens to be, and learn something from it, because Walter's story is one story in a much larger story, which really takes place within the context of American history and black history and, mm-hmm. and that whole, the way all that transpired over the last 200 years, and certainly if it's a footnote, it'll be a very fascinating footnote, and thank God it'll have some very important other messages as well.
Well, you know, Walter's story, I lived through lived with as part of the civil rights movement in the late 50s and 60s, of course, and Walter's story and how he dealt with his oppression and his loss of constitutional rights really mirrors what happened in a lot of the, you know, whether it was the lunch counter sit-ins, those kinds of things during the civil rights movement.
It really does show the whole story in black and pro-life in America. It does illustrate why what happened to him was so extra egregious, because mm-hmm. you really couldn't look at this situation, read the book, and come out of the situation thinking that this abortion clinic and the city of Oakland had to have come up with the conclusion that because he's black, he was more of a threat to their business model at the abortion clinic than had he just been white, because they weren't mm-hmm. harassing people in front of the abortion clinic otherwise.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So For those that don't know, Walter Hoy is a Baptist pastor. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Mm-hmm. And an inspirational figure. In fact, he will be one of the featured speakers at the Walk for Life West Coast in San Francisco this year. He's not one of these powerful orators, etc. He's powerful, but it's not his shtick, if you will. He's a real mild mannered guy who just very much believes in Jesus Christ, believes in God, believes in the pro-life movement, believes in the sanctity of life. And tell us a little bit about his story in Oakland.
Well, it really did start about 10 years ago. I would say it's a few years before that, so maybe 13 years ago, when he began to go to the Walk for Life and when people started to see somebody who was not a white person show up, and it was rare, really, in the African American community to have an activist or a person come out, emerge as a voice for life, and people responded to that. And eventually, there were a few of those people at the Walk for Life who approached him about standing in front of an abortion clinic and doing a little sidewalk outreach. And so he took them up on that. He invited a couple of his own congregants, a couple of very elderly ladies who were very nice and did a very nice job out there, but were still very old. And we're talking 89 years old, 80 to 89 years old. And he went out there and began outreach 2 hours a week for just one day each week. And the first day he was out there, they called the police. Then it sort of set off just a trail of events that went from the abortion clinic to folks at the city council and the abortion clinic and other parties, interested parties within the city that began to work together to craft a law, a so-called bubble law, to put Walter out there, to put a law out there that could potentially ensnare him. And ultimately, that's what happened, with a week-long trial, and then he did some time in jail because of it.
One of those rare laws that is pretty much aimed specifically at one person.
It's crazy that if you pay attention to the details of the trial portion of the book, you see how it comes to be quite clear that the people who were the victims didn't know they were victims, and ultimately he was convicted for standing within 8 feet of these people who were following him around on the sidewalk mm-hmm. to block his message,
right.
drown out his message by yelling things, and also hold a whiteboard in front of his face so he couldn't walk away from them. They would just walk back up to him.
Yeah, you know, anybody, it's almost comical if it wasn't so serious. Anybody who has ever met Walter Hoy would know that he is the furthest thing from someone who would harass anybody about anything.
I was watching some city council video the other night. It's archived online. Folks can watch it. I was watching some video, and there's one moment where where a string of people went up there in front of the city council and said, these people are out there harassing. They're doing these things. Mm-hmm. They're chasing people down the street. They're holding up evil signs. They're doing all this bad stuff. And then Walter stands up there with these two elderly old ladies that I just mentioned, and he says, this sister next to me right here is 89 years old. Mm-hmm. She is not a public safety threat. And he points out his other colleague. She's not a public safety threat. And you hear this soft-spoken gentleman mm-hmm. and these two ladies, and you just know there's something wrong with what these people are doing. That is the city council. There's something wrong with what the city council is doing by trying to portray him and his colleagues as being bad people.
So he was basically, I guess for want of a better expression, offered to take a plea, do a little community service and promise never to do such a horrible thing as protest abortion again. And he said, nope, I'll go to jail before I'll give up my constitutional rights.
Well, it's pretty startling that they started out with 2 years. See, so he gets convicted of two of the four counts, mm-hmm. and each one holds a potential sentence of a year. So the DA's office says, we want to do 2 years in jail. So 2 years in jail for something that most people wouldn't even have gotten a ticket for doing. And ultimately, the judge knew that that wasn't going to fly and wanted to go for 30 days. Suspended sentence, and Walter could have done something else. He could have done community service.
Sure.
But he said they had to do a stay-away order from the clinic, which is mm-hmm. what the clinic wanted to begin with.
Sure.
Keep him away from the clinic. So when Walter heard that, he talked to the lawyers, and they decided, you know what, if there's a stay-away order that violates his rights, prevents him from being able to stand on a street corner and talk to somebody about an alternative to abortion, then he wasn't going to accept that.
Yeah.
And he knew that jail time would be ahead of him, and he was willing to accept that. And that was a tough battle as well, getting through that whole ordeal.
Sure. So did he go immediately to jail?
It was about a 3-week time frame, I think, before mm-hmm. they finally remanded him to custody. They wanted to ask the judge to suspend sentencing until the appeal with the federal courts had gone through, but which normally happens in most, even big criminal drug cases.
Yeah.
You have situations where they do, you know, hold off until there's a decision. But in this case, they said no, and then Walter ended up going to jail.
Yeah, you're exactly right. In terms of criminal cases, so-called criminal cases in this case, that very, very, very often, and you're out on bail or OR based on we're waiting for the appeal, unless you're deemed to be a real threat to public safety, which makes sense. And in this case, no, we're not going to let Walter Hoy walk the streets. We just don't know what he's up to, you know. And it's nonsense. Of course, it's punitive in the extreme. And so, where did he end up? What, in the Alameda County Jail?
Santa Rita, what they call it. They're Alameda County Jail, and I went over there and visited the jail, and saw some of the places that he experienced, and went to his what they call jail pod, mm-hmm. where they have several cages where he almost a military barracks sort of set up behind mm-hmm. the bars, and that's where you live and do your daily life.
What do they call it?
Santa Rita.
Santa Rita. Okay. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, and then what? After 30 days or so, he's released, but it's still under appeal, correct?
That's correct. And I love the book for the way it proportions out various aspects of the story, from Walter's history to how he became a minister to how he got involved in this, how he got really tracked down by the authorities to give him the citation and then ultimately going to the trial and then going to jail. So the last part of the book covers the various appeals that were going on and looking into it. And ultimately, Life Legal Defense Foundation, which was handling mm-hmm. Walter's defense and also all the appeals, did a pretty wonderful job. And we interviewed many of those folks for the book as well. It seems that ultimately they wanted to get the law deemed unconstitutional, the bubble law, that is.
Right.
But the court allowed it to continue, said it was not unconstitutional. But what they ended up doing was saying that the way that it was applied to Walter was unconstitutional because it was viewpoint-based. In other words, the city of Oakland argued that it wasn't viewpoint-based, and of course, Walter's attorneys went in there and then argued the fact that it was viewpoint-based because he is a person voluntarily being out there in front of the abortion clinic, the holdout, the homicide block in a public place, holding a sign, trying to hand out literature, trying to talk to these ladies. And the other folks who are out there, the abortion clinic volunteer escorts, are essentially pro-choice activists.
Right?
So they're out there, they're pro-choice activists, and Walter's out there, he's a pro-life activist, and it was okay for them to block his message, but it was a violation of the law if he would have appeared to have blocked their message and then being close to them. So they could be there and say, they could approach without permission within 8 feet.
Right.
They could counsel on the street as the person was walking up, but Walter was not permitted to do so. So they decided that that was unfairly applied. And I believe as a result, the city of Oakland has just pretty much just pretends that that law isn't there anymore.
Yeah, yeah,
because it's,
yeah,
it's ridiculous.
It's absolutely. If Walter was agreeing with the escorts and holding a sign saying support abortion rights, he would not have been arrested for violating a bubble law.
Absolutely. He could have said anything. He could have been out there advocating for, legal marijuana
or free lemonade
or
anything
else. Or something.
Yeah.
Anything he wanted to, as long as he didn't mention, please don't have an abortion, we have alternatives to you.
Yeah. Right. And viewpoint discrimination, they could fill volumes of books on case law on that. And it's interesting. It eventually ended up at the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals, or the so-called very quote-unquote liberal Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals, which is always been very strong on freedom of speech issues.
And I think that a lot of people in Oakland who would call themselves liberals and Democrats politically who opposed this bubble law in the first place said, if I could protest the death penalty at San Quentin, and I can protest the war, why can't these people say we'd like to give you an alternative to abortion? And,
right.
and there were people that spoke out about that, and that was something that got drowned out. City Council didn't want to hear any alternatives to the one position, which was pass this bubble law and make this all right again.
Well, fortunately, there are some people out there that are very consistent when it comes to freedom of speech issues. That the old saying, I may disagree with what you say, but I will defend to the death your right to say it. And some people really, really are very consistent on that. Whether the protest is something that you don't like or something you do like. Everybody, and that's one of the foundations that's made America so great, is that we're not afraid to speak out against the emperor or against current law or anything else if we feel that justice isn't being done. And you have the right to stand on a street corner and advocate wonderful things, and you have the right to stand on a street corner and make a fool of yourself if you want to. Those things are all protected by the First Amendment to the Constitution.
Bob, I'm a military veteran. I was in the Army during Desert Storm, and I also went back to Iraq in 2004 to 2005 and did my service. And part of my responsibility to really being a solid journalist and writer and American is to tell a story like Walter's story.
Mm-hmm.
It's frustrating, just like you said. It's because he was denied his speech in a time when we really need consistency and say, look, if you believe this, that's okay. But you've got to understand that other people have a right to disagree with you. In the modern society that we have right now is you can be silenced quite easily. Me writing this book, when I was a secular journalist, a guy who wants to do a lot of writing in the secular world, make movies and that sort of thing, I take a great deal of risk writing a book like this, because people will look at this and they'll say, and they'll criticize me because of the pro-life message of the book. And in fact, I'm willing to take those lumps because it's my right as an American to be able to say what's in this book and support Walter as his story, you know, really tells us exactly what we're talking about here, is you have the right to stand up and speak for the pro-life message or any other message in America. That's
absolutely
what we were born to. Yeah.
You know, and you know, the thing that people don't understand is you never know whose ox is going to be gored the next time. You know, you think, oh, I don't like his issue, therefore silence him. And then the next day, you've got an issue and somebody wants to silence you. And pretty soon you've just got silence. And that's when tyranny takes over.
The whole book is done so in the context of history, like I said, and spends a great deal of time looking at history, Black American history, and what happened after the Civil War. And
right.
We see the same thing occurring when the erosion and final, I guess you'd call it, dissolution of Reconstruction. What happened after the Civil War led to another 100 years of servitude, essentially, for blacks in this country.
Absolutely.
And it was because of political expedience, because of being able to silence speech by tyranny of the majority. That's how this went down. And Walter's story is an example of that. And one of the reasons why it's so egregious and was so important for me in telling the story.
Tell us about, is this an Ignatius book?
Ignatius Press. It was an Ignatius book from the beginning.
Mm-hmm.
Vivian Dudrow, who I know you've had on the show,
right,
is the editor of the book. And she was the one who shepherded it through the idea process. And then by some miracle of fate discernment, I guess, by Father Fezzio, they reached out to me and asked me if I wanted to do it. And I never hesitated right from the beginning.
Oh, that's good. Well, you were in good hands between Vivian Dudrow and Father Fezzio. You're in very good hands.
Yeah, you're telling me.
Yeah, yeah. And you're in very good publishing hands, too. You know, I mean, they're good people, but they're also, boy, they know their business as well. And how great that was. How long from when you first, got the idea or got the start of the project, how long to actually publication of the book? How long a process is that?
Wow, exciting. So much had to be done, and so much material had to be gone over, including all the trial material and the transcripts and everything else. I think it was 2014 when I got the
Wow.
I don't think it was. I know it was September 2014 when I got my first email from Father Fezzio, and then I started interviews in early 2015 with Walter, and that's where I started my groundwork, you know, just laying the foundation of how the whole story was going to go. And so I think I delivered the entire transcript, according to the contract, within a year. And I really didn't know what to expect because it was my first book. I didn't know what the process exactly was going to be like. And I delivered it, and so that was 2016. And then there were really kind of no noise from nothing and not a peep out of the publisher for quite a while, quite a few months. And that's because they have books that they already have in line to get done.
Sure.
And so Vivian's at her desk working away on another book right now after finishing this one, probably two books, who knows.
Right.
But they have a line of books they've got to get through. So it takes them a while to do that. Finally, it started to work its way through the process. We started working on rewrites, and we managed to get that all accomplished in 2017. And here we are.
Wow. So people can get it from Ignatius.com or hopefully at their favorite Catholic bookstore.
And also, I mentioned most of the commercial bookstores are going to have it as well eventually. I've seen it, the major bookstore that's out there everybody knows about has it at a few of the stores.
Mm-hmm.
I know I've seen it in Roseville, and I think it's in Modesto and a couple other
very good
places. Yeah, call your stores. Also, if you feel like it, you've read the book, get on there and do a review on Amazon help promote Walter's story, because that's what it's all about.
Very good. Well, Robert, it's a pleasure to meet you, even by phone, and I hope our paths cross again soon.
Certainly, Bob. Anytime. Just make sure you let me know if you have any questions at all or you want me on.
Great. Well, thanks for doing this inspired book. It's going to be read by a lot of people.
Thank you, Bob.
Thank you. That's Robert Ortigo, who is the author of the book Black and Pro-Life in America, the story of Walter Hoy. And if you want to Google it or learn more, it's Hoye, Walter Hoy, Pastor Walter Hoy, and we all remember we've had Walter on this program on a number of occasions, and he will be one of the speakers at the Walk for Life West Coast Saturday, January 26th in San Francisco. We'll take a quick break. We'll be back with more on the Bishop's Hour right after this. This portion of the Bishop's Hour is brought to you by a grant from the St. Vincent de Paul Society. Drop by and shop at their thrift store, a beautiful, beautiful thrift store at 2275 Watt Avenue. Open Mondays through Saturdays from 10 to 8 and Sundays from 11 to 6. They also accept donations at the store, donations of furniture, appliances, clothing, books, everyday household items. Your donations help to fund the many projects of the St. Vincent de Paul Society throughout the Diocese of Sacramento. Do such wonderful, wonderful work, and the thrift store is one of the ways they raise the funds to help people throughout the diocese, and also many of their clients are able to access the thrift store for items that they need. You can give them a call. They will come pick it up as well, but you can give them a call. They're at 916-972-1212. And remember, again, the thrift store is open 7 days a week at 2275 Watt Avenue right here in Sacramento. Well, Bishop Soto refers to Christ the King Retreat Center as the jewel of the diocese, and indeed it is. What a beautiful oasis it is. It's located in Citrus Heights, right in the hustle and bustle of the city, and you feel like you're getting away from it all when you turn off the main road and just come into Christ the King Passionist Retreat Center. Christ the King has served Northern California and the Diocese of Sacramento for over 60 years through parish weekend retreats, individual spiritual direction, and a variety of other programs. For information on all the programs that they offer, including residential programs, give them a call. They're at 916-725-4720, or you can visit them at 6520 Van Maren Lane in Citrus Heights. And we certainly thank the St. Vincent de Paul Society and Christ the King Passionist Retreat Center for their fine and longstanding support of the Bishop's Hour. This portion of the Bishop's Hour is brought to you by a grant from the Mercy Foundation, enriching lives in the Sacramento region through Sisters of Mercy ministries in healthcare, education, housing, and the care for the poor and elderly. For the Mercy Foundation, philanthropy is one of the most powerful expressions of compassion and love. Just as many people in our community need a hand, countless others are reaching out to them with comfort and hope. You can express your care and concern for the less fortunate with a gift to the Mercy Foundation. You can give them a call, 916-851-2700. That's 916-851-2700. And you can be confident that fully 100% of your contribution will support the Sisters of Ministry of Mercy Ministry or ministries that you choose. And what a wonderful treasure Easter's Catholic Books and Gifts has been for all of us here in the diocese as they transition into new ownership and management. They continue to offer wonderful workshops, wonderful resources for the Catholic community throughout the Diocese of Sacramento. Not only does Easter's provide a wide array of Catholic books, both current releases and longtime classics, but they also sponsor a number of valuable workshops and lectures throughout the year. They're located at 6916 Sunrise Boulevard in Citrus Heights. Give them a call, 916-338-7272. We also receive a generous underwriting support by Crumley & Associates, a private wealth advisory practice of Ameriprise Financial Services. If you have questions about retirement, Crumley & Associates can help you with their confident retirement approach that can help define a clear roadmap to get you where you want to go. You can contact them, get all the details at Crumley & Associates, 7956 California Avenue in Fair Oaks. They're at 916-638-4600. That's 916-638-4600. And we are certainly appreciative of the fine and longstanding support of the Mercy Foundation, of Easter's Catholic Books and Gifts, and of Crumley and Associates.
This is Bishop William K. Wiegand, the Bishop Emeritus of Sacramento, and you're listening to the Bishop's Hour with Bob Denning.
Thank you, Bishop Wiegand. Thanks for all you do and have done for the Diocese of Sacramento and for the Universal Church throughout your career. It's been very, very much appreciated by so many people. You probably don't know how many people appreciate your efforts. Well, Jim McCormick joins us from the Sacramento Choral Society and Orchestra. Jim,
hey,
the calendar has turned.
Yeah, yeah.
First Sunday of Advent has come and gone, and home for the holidays.
Here we are.
Stares us in the face.
I love the sound of the word December.
Yes.
I mean, it's Advent, yes, and it's also still a lot of joy.
Yeah.
And a lot of that joy, of course, is through music making.
Indeed. Oh, I mean, it's. I know my kids... on Thanksgiving, as soon as the dinner has been cleared off, it's like, can we play Christmas music? When are we going to get a tree? You know, I know we should be talking about Advent, which we do, but it's like music is so important to the season.
Yeah, it is a great catalyst all year long, but there's something about the month of December. We all have a need to connect, a need to belong.
I don't think there's another season that you associate with music like you do the Christmas season?
Pretty well. I mean, as far as drawing a sense of community together, I guess Easter would give it some pretty good competition,
right.
Certainly in the church.
In the church, yeah.
Absolutely. But anyway, we're delighted, Bob. This coming Saturday, two performances, 23rd anniversary of the Sacramento Choral Society, doing Home for the Holidays, now known as Wells Fargo Home for the Holidays, as they are our concert sponsor. And I want to give a nod to Kitchen Mart because they're also helping. So it would be thrilling. And the big change this year, ladies and gentlemen, Bob and I want to emphasize that because Memorial Auditorium is being renovated, this year's two performances on December 8th will be at the Sacramento Community Center Theater.
Very, very close by.
It's only a couple blocks,
right.
But it would be inconvenient to park your car, wander, or try to wander into the Memorial Auditorium. And then
might be able to get in if you go
exactly,
through the cyclone fence.
But. And you know, Bob, 17 years ago, we did performances at the Community Center for Christmas.
Right, right.
And then later, starting in 2002, we started over at Memorial Auditorium. So
and you actually did one at the Mondavi.
We did about four.
Oh, did
Mondavi,
you? Yeah. Okay.
So we're sort of back home because in 1996 we had our first Home for the Holidays at the Community Center.
That was the very first, was it?
1996, exactly.
And how old is the Community Center?
It's 76, so another 20-some years,
okay.
So 43 years
it
or so.
It still has a feeling of being new.
Oh, yeah. And ladies and gentlemen, we do make the best of the Community Center. We'll create magic. You'll have the usual procession in darkness, children's chorus, way up in the second balcony, singing Gregorian chant with candles, and then a solemn procession to the stage, an audience sing along, special guest singers from Make-A-Wish Foundation, and then this dynamic headliner from Chattanooga, Tennessee, Susanna Byler. And she will be also accompanied by the puppets. So this year, I want to tell you, it's not the Grinch.
Well, the Grinch is not going to be there. That's a relief to a lot of us.
And you know what? Good riddance is all I can say. The son of a... He caused such heartache the last couple of years, you know. But he ended up coming around.
Ultimately.
But this year, we're going to feature the elves and the shoemaker with puppets.
Oh, wow. Oh.
So this program on Saturday at 2 o'clock and again at 7:30 p.m. is for children of all ages. So we welcome young children and adults, of course.
Has Santa been notified of the change of venue?
He texted me that he's making his way. He's leaving Thursday.
Because I understand he pre-programs a reindeer now. You know,
it's all understood, exactly.
Yeah, so you make sure he knows where he's going.
But with climate change, he's been living a bit closer these days. So we have Santa, we have the elves, we have the puppets, we have Don Kendrick narrating stories. And Susanna Byler will also serve as narrator in The Elves and The Shoemaker. So it's going to be exciting, and it's thrilling to see all these people singing together. So the concerts are December 8th at 2 o'clock at the Community Center Theater and at 7:30 p.m. as well.
Yeah, I don't know why they need to renovate the Memorial Auditorium. It's only like 92 years old.
I know. New chairs and everything. So, wow. Yeah, they're working hard on it. So
they're not going to change the ambience, are they?
No, the horseshoe seating and the magic, they know that they have to stay within the limits of what was historically correct back then. So we're all excited to see and hear the changes because it will affect everything.
So is that owned by the city?
Yes, it is.
Community center owned by the city as well?
Convention center, city, community center. Quite a few of these buildings that are open to the public are owned by the city.
Yeah.
So we'll have a wonderful professional orchestra of 50 professional players, 140 members in our chorus, and 24 members in the children's chorus. Alex Grambauer is the new director of the children's chorus. So there's a lot to be excited about.
You're partnering with Make-A-Wish as well?
Exactly. We have two young singers, Riley and Miles, who will be joining us on stage on the second half of the concert. We have a wonderful audience sing along, and then they'll perform with us in Silent Night, and We Wish You a Merry Christmas. And that's a wonderful partnership. They do such amazing work, the Make-A-Wish Foundation.
Very good. Very good. Do you have a little cut for us?
To us, Bob, it wouldn't be Christmas in the choral orchestral field if we didn't hear from the great English composer John Rutter. Mm-hmm. So I thought we'd start off with a lilting work called The Angel's Carol, and it's for chorus, SATB chorus, and harp and strings. So this is The Angel's Carol by John Rutter.
Beautiful stuff.
It is. It's lilting, but it's just, there's something so very calming about beautiful music when you have orchestra and chorus and voices and the message, the message of joy at Christmas time.
Jim, the moving from the Memorial Auditorium over to the Convention Center, tell us technically. What are there challenges there, or is it? Is it easier? Is it harder? Or is it just different?
It's. I might say that it's somewhat easier at the community center because at Memorial we have to build this large wall behind the chorus,
right.
And we have these clouds that we have to fabricate. But at the community center theater, that wall is put in place within seconds, and we don't have to build the clouds can be lowered that are already there. So from a logistical point of view, it's easier. The stage at Memorial is wider, which gives us more space, but we have enough space at the community center. So I think technically it's easier at the community center theater. We have to work very hard at Memorial,
mm-hmm.
and all the other arts groups that go there next year, they're going to find that out too. For about 12 years, we have spent big dollars making Memorial Auditorium performable. And so it's easier to roll into the community center theater and put on a concert.
Will that change with the renovations at the Memorial?
They keep telling me. I'm from Missouri, but they keep telling me that it's going to be better sound. We won't have to build so many walls and ceilings and things like that. So we're eager to find out. We want to the proof is in the pudding.
Indeed. And what's the timeline on the Memorial Auditorium?
They claim that it's supposed to be in operation by September of 2019.
Okay.
So all the other groups will be moving over there. And for us, it's home. We've used it a lot, you know. So we'll be doing classical concerts at Memorial, not just Christmas.
Very good.
Just for 1 year.
What's the difference between seating capacities?
Oh boy, there's about 3,800 at Memorial you can seat. It's huge, and we have still a large crowd. You can seat 2,400 at the Community Center Theater.
Hmm.
So they're both very large.
Yeah.
But Memorial, because of that second balcony, it just goes on forever.
It does. It really does. It's
and a lot of wooden creaky seats up there.
So are you going to have enough seating this year?
We will. What we're planning to do, because we have the matinee at 2:00. And the evening at 7:30, we hope to accommodate at least 1,800 at each of the performances. Normally, they split it up pretty evenly, and if so, then we won't even have to open the second balcony.
Uh-huh.
So, because the main floor downstairs accommodates 1,200 seats,
okay.
600 in the first balcony. So, if we do 1,800 times 2, which is an amazing crowd for a very busy weekend
in
Sacramento. So, and we've ordered sunshine, so life is good.
Good. Yeah. You have another cut for us?
Yes. You know, we have come to know this young American composer, Dan Forrest.
Mm-hmm.
We've done two or three of his large works, and we found out that he wrote this new work, See Amid the Winter's Snow, Dan Forrest. And it's just haunting. It's beautiful poetry and soft, and I consider it a very introspective work that allows you to sit back and contemplate the true meaning of Christmas. Dan Forrest, See Amid the Winter's Snow.
Jim McCormick talking about the home for the holidays. Jim, it's actually the Wells Fargo home for the holidays. Talk about Wells Fargo's role in this.
I'll tell you, for 7 years now, Wells Fargo has been our corporate sponsor for naming rights for the very popular downtown tradition home for the holidays. And they have supported us in so many ways in outreach to veterans as well. And other nonprofits. So we take our hat off to Wells Fargo for what they do locally in the community. We're mindful that nationwide Wells Fargo's had a rough 2 or 3 years, but they are really working hard in the community to support so many nonprofits. So I think without their help, we're not sure we could do these performances. So we take our hat off and thank Wells Fargo.
Tell us a little bit about your headliner soprano, Susanna Biller.
Yes.
From Chattanooga?
Chattanooga, Tennessee. She just spent the last month in Wexford, Ireland.
Oh.
She's an opera singer, but she crosses over. She can do Broadway. She does light classical really, really well. Big personality. Now, Bob, there's no wallpaper on the Community Center Theater, but if there were wallpaper on that theater wall, she would tear it off.
She'd tear it off.
So
anyway,
you'll find she's fun to be with. She personifies joy. So if you get her and Don Kendrick on the same stage, a good time is about to happen.
Oh, that's
so
great.
We're looking forward to Susanna having her with us.
That's great. And is she in residence in Chattanooga?
She does a lot of opera work in Iowa, so that's her home. She's quite international, actually, and we were lucky to get her last summer. So she's based out of Chattanooga, but I know she's doing a lot of opera in Iowa and around the U.S. And so Don was able to locate her through an agency that we work with very closely. So she flies in on Thursday. From Chattanooga, so we're looking forward to that.
And then how many like rehearsals will she have?
Well, she'll get a Friday afternoon rehearsal, and then we have one large dress rehearsal Friday night, and then we lay down the two shows on Saturday. So it all comes together pretty fast, and that includes choreography, getting people on and off stage, different soloists, and follow spots, miking issues, things like that. But we're organized, and we're looking forward to a great show.
So no, I've never. I'm sure you have, just because you're really attuned to everything. The only glitch I have ever observed in all of these that I've been to is one of the candles didn't lit when they processed in. It's the only glitch I've ever seen.
That must have been a base. Perhaps he was half lit.
I think so.
That's something. Yeah, those darn glow sticks.
Yes, yeah.
They do look like candles. Yeah. That's a great glitch. Yeah.
And I probably wouldn't have noticed except one of my kids noticed.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, no, and the chorus operations team that we have in the choir, they really pulled together to make all the decorations happen.
Yeah.
Thanks to the ballet, we'll have two large nutcrackers on either side of the stairways out in the lobby. We're really looking forward to it. So, folks, if you're interested in tickets for our Wells Fargo Home for the Holidays, the number at the box office is 916-808-5181, or go to sacramentocoral.com.
Very good. Do you have another cut for us?
Yes, I'll tell you. It wouldn't be Christmas if we didn't hear an amazing rendition of O Holy Night.
Oh, boy.
And so this arrangement by John Rutter will feature Susanna Beiler and our chorus and the children, too, as well. So I want to point out that the cut we're about to hear features a baritone. So this is not Susanna Beiler singing, but she will sing it on Saturday. O Holy Night, John Rutter.
Thanks, Jim. The remaining 8 minutes, we're just going to play Oh Holy Night over again.
I'd like to mention that baritone was Tevi Ditter. Tevi performed with us in 2014 at Memorial Auditorium.
Tevi, not Tevia.
No, I know. Yeah, they call him Tevi. Exactly. Yeah. So we have all these memories. And, you know, the members of the chorus, we have about 22 new members who will be making their debut with our professional orchestra. Because for the Stained Glass concert, we had Ryan Enright as our organist. So it'll be nice to see their reaction on stage and all the magic. And people do. They come to sing. On the second half, we bring the lights up. And we sing a whole series of Christmas carols together, and Santa Claus will be getting the crowd going too. So it's really a wholesome community event.
It's everything You can watch The Miracle on 34th Street. You can watch It's a Wonderful Life. You can watch all those old movies. Yeah. This brings that all back.
Mm-hmm.
It really does. Yeah. It has a real community feel to it.
Well, and the touching opening, young children on stage, especially in the beginning when everything's in darkness and there's a pitch pipe blown for the pitch. And the children in the second balcony will sing Christus Hodie Natus Est, Christ is born today. It's a new work. It is Gregorian chant style, written by Don Kendrick. Mm-hmm. So it's nice to have Alex Granbaugh and the children's chorus in the second balcony. We'll all be down below, so hopefully they'll sound like little angels from on high. And then the large chorus does this amazing sound around work, Personet Hodie, about the joy of Christmas. And then a solemn procession to the stage in darkness. The wonderful orchestral arrangements, by the way. We learned a long time ago to challenge the orchestra, mm-hmm. make sure they are challenged, because those arrangements, they just have to jump off the page when you have choral and orchestra together.
Sure, I remember last year when, I think it was right at the end of the concert, when Don Kendrick announced that he was retiring from Sac State, and where he'd been, 33 years or something, all the audience heard was retiring and the groan, and the kids saying, what about next year? It was like the world was ending.
He didn't finish the sentence exactly. And so this is, you're right, this is Don's first home for the holidays, now that he's enjoying what we call semi-retirement.
Right, yes. Yeah.
Instead of six choirs and a professional orchestra, he only has three choirs and a professional orchestra.
Yeah, I'm sure he's just doing nothing these days.
So it's great. Things because the following Saturday on the 15th and Sunday the 16th, Don will have additional concerts, this time at Sacred Heart Church with Schola Cantora.
Right.
And when you come to the concert on Saturday the 8th, home for the holidays, you'll see a wonderful ad in our program book promoting Don's other concerts. So it's great because, we all want the true meaning of Christmas. Yes, it's nice to receive presents, but if you can go and feel the warmth of a community that's pulling together, singing together, feeling almost like a spiritual connection with one another, then I think that's the best gift of all.
Will there be an audience sing-along this year?
After the break, we bring the lights up, and I know that Don will turn to the audience, and he'll say, this is your chance to make your debut with a professional orchestra.
Yeah.
And you turn to your neighbor, and you say, give me your best.
Yeah.
And they do that. And then the next 9-10 minutes, just lift that roof off, So there was
people really belted out.
They know the harmony.
Mm-hmm.
It's pretty amazing. There's some great singers hiding away in that audience.
Oh, yeah.
And then there are some Milli Vanillis mouthing the words.
Yes, yeah.
But what touches me is when I turn around and I stare up to the first grand tier, and I see young families,
mm-hmm.
Holding hands or holding their babies and singing with their program book in their hands. It reminds us why we do what we do.
Yeah.
And it's touching.
Yeah. Jim, how do people get tickets again?
Sure. I think the simplest way is to call the Community Center box office, 916-808-5181. Or you can visit us online at sacramentochoral.com. We will have some tickets available on the day of the show. And students on the day of the show, 1 hour ahead, they can get rush seats for $13.
Oh, wow.
And that's a good deal. So, rush seats for students on December 8th. 1 hour
before
showtime. So you
get some value out of your tuition.
Absolutely, yeah. Celebrate that maybe they have exams the following week.
Sure.
Take a break either at 2 o'clock or 7:30.
Jim, so how many people are in the choral, not counting the orchestra, but the choral
society? So right now we're at 140 singers, and then 24 on stage with the children's chorus.
So
164, I guess.
And this is the 23rd.
23rd.
So of that 140, how many were around?
From 1996, I'd be willing to say about 50, maybe 50 plus from 23 years ago are still in the chorus.
Wow.
And they take pride in that.
Oh, I bet.
Yeah. Yeah.
Did they get to, they got, is there a pecking order here?
There's no golden badge.
I'm a founder.
Yeah, exactly.
A secret handshake
I get a front row seat. Yeah. No, they all, the whole secret of the success is due to the passion of the chorus and also Don Kendrick's leadership in our board. Pretty amazing to think that there are 12,000 community choruses in the U.S. and only one has an agreement with a professional orchestra. And we're it. And that's why PBS, KBIE, they did a documentary on us years ago, and it went national. And we're happy that we are partnering with KBIE on this concert. So we've had some good partners to make everything jump off the page.
So is Sacramento a model for the rest of the world, well, the right way to do it?
For those other large arts groups that are courageous enough to establish a nonprofit and figure out a way to pay a professional orchestra, stagehands, stage manager, and rent these good venues. Because the thing with us, Bob, we are a large team, so we can't just perform anywhere. Very few places can accommodate 160-plus singers and a large orchestra. And the sound issues that go with it, you know. But I think once we dim the lights in the community center, we'll have some wonderful decorations. And so we're urging people to come and join us at Wells Fargo Home for the Holidays, December 8th.
Very good. Jim, why don't you take us out to break?
Okay,
and again, so, one more time.
Sure. The phone number for tickets is 916-808-5181. Wells Fargo Home for the Holidays, December 8th, 2 p.m. and 7:30 p.m. at the Sacramento Community Center Theater.
And also, just a quick reminder, we'll have you on next week to talk about this, Sacred Hearts Schola Cantorum, Saturday, December 15th, 8 p.m., Sunday, December 16th, 2 p.m., all at Sacred Heart Church, 39th and J Street. It's a wonderful annual event as well, but we'll tell you more about that next week.
Great. Well, I thought we'd finish, Bob, with Barlow Bradford, American composer, his arrangement, choral orchestral of the Wexford Carol.
Very good. Thanks, Jim.
Thank you, Bob.
Underwriting for the Bishop's Hour is provided by Catholic Funeral and Cemetery Services, a ministry of the Diocese of Sacramento. As a church-owned nonprofit founded in faith, Catholic Funeral and Cemetery Services is dedicated to providing education, support, and resources during life's most difficult moments. They will make every effort to enable you to realize your final wishes while empowering families to make completely informed decisions. You can give them a call. They are at 855-525-2255. 855-525-2285. That's 855-525-2285. We're also brought to you by a generous grant from Christine Cipperly, marriage and family therapist. If you're looking for help with family or personal problems, if you'd like help from someone with a Catholic point of view, someone who understands the importance of marriage and family and affirms the dignity of every human life, Christine Cipperly is a trained and experienced counselor of married couples, families, and individuals. She can work with you on your marriage, your parenting, or your individual struggles in a way that will not violate our faith. Christine is a wonderful, wonderful therapist. Give her a call. She's at 530-400-4757. That's 530-400-4757. We'd like to thank Christine Cipperly and Catholic Cemeteries and Funeral Services for their fine and longstanding support of the Bishop's Hour. That's going to do it for us for today. Thanks for listening, everyone. God bless. We'll talk to you again tomorrow.